Blog Talk Radio.
Again. Anyway, here are the events on November 7, 2012. Of course, last night we had the election of the re-election of Barack Hussein Obama. And, of course, some of that plays into events today. Anyway, in 994, Mohammed Ibn Hazm was born. He was the historian who wrote about Spain. And, of course, there's quite a bit of Muslim Islamic influence in Spanish history. The Muslims, North African Muslims, contribute to Spain's culture, their medicine, veterinary medicine, architecture, astronomy, mathematics. And they were kicked out by El Cid and Ferdinand and Isabella. And of course, there's a movie about this called El Cid, starring Charlton Heston, who incidentally was coached by my late speech teacher, Professor Dolly Thornton, from Northwestern University and Wright Junior College. In 1867, the great woman scientist Marie Curie, or Marie Skłodowska, I cannot never pronounce these Polish names, later married Dr. Curie in France. And she discovered radium, and she got two Nobel Prizes, the first woman ever to achieve that. And I think her daughter was also a physicist. She died of cancer, of course, being exposed to radium and not noting that it was you could get contaminated and die from that substance. 1874, this is very relevant to what's going on in the world with the communists. And Leon Trotsky, the founder of the Red Army, was born on this date. He had a falling out with Stalin after Lenin died, and Stalin forced him out of Russia and pursued him, tried to assassinate him, and successfully had his assassin infiltrate Trotsky's compound in Mexico and attack Trotsky with a pickaxe, and Trotsky died 2 days later. Leon Trotsky's great-nephew, Philip Bronstein, because that was the original family name, was from Los Angeles and later became the editor of the Hearst San Francisco Examiner. He's no longer there. A great conductor, Efren Kurtz, his birthday. And back to the military, great actor, Dean Jagger, who, if you remember, was a colonel with a law degree in 12 Quack High, starring Gary... Good Lord. Anyway, it was about the 8th Air Force and how they perfected daylight bombing over Germany and over the occupied Europe in World War II. And also Gregory Peck was the star. And also Dean Jagger starred in Elmer Gantry, which also starred Burt Lancaster. Great French novelist Albert Camus, who was born in Algeria. Billy Graham, the evangelist, I think he's still living on this day. Al Hurt, the great trumpet player from Louisiana. we have a great Welsh soprano, Gwyneth Jones, who had a nodule on her throat, couldn't sing for a while. Joan Sutherland, the big Australian soprano. She worked with her husband. He was a conductor in a lot of her recordings and opera. Joni Mitchell was born in Alberta, Canada, folk singer. Among the deaths today, Eleanor Roosevelt, who was one of the founders of the United Nations. Gene Tunney, the great boxer. Steve McQueen, who died at age 50, was in a famous San Francisco movie named Bullet. And, of course, The Great Escape, World War II. Among the events today, Lloyd Dunsmore, during the American Revolution in 1775, promised freedom to black slaves who joined the British Army to fight against the colonists. 1805, Lewis and Clark, excuse me, it was cold, finally reached the Pacific Ocean. It was quite a trek across the country. In 1865, the oldest newspaper is still publishing, London Gazette, was founded. 1876, the first black graduated from Yale, Edmund Boudet. In 1876, the first black medical college, Meharry, was set up in Central Tennessee University. And, of course, in 1876, we had a controversy, the election in that year, between Rufford B. Hayes, a Republican, and Samuel Tilden of New York. They both claimed victory, and it went into the House of Representatives. And Rufford B. Hayes from Ohio, one of the last presidents elected from Ohio, Harding was the last. Hayes, the Republicans made a deal with the Democrats in Congress, the Southern Democrats, to remove the Union troops from the South. The Union troops were protecting the civil rights of newly freed blacks. And so what happened? The Democrats in the South, the Dixiecrats, whatever, started abusing the blacks again and instituted things like poll tax, segregation, Ku Klux Klan, and all of that. And, of course, the blacks, after being freed by Abraham Lincoln, reluctantly freed because he wanted to send them back to Africa, had all along for years had been Republicans. And nobody understands how the blacks, the Negroes, as they were called at that time, became Democrats. They still don't understand that. And in 1885, our Canadian friends in the North, they completed the Canadian Pacific Railroad to the Pacific Ocean. And, of course, in eastern Canada, there's Canadian National Airlines. In 1916, Jeanette Rankin was the first woman elected to Congress from Montana. She voted against the United States entry into World War I. She did the same thing in World War II. She voted against America's entry into World War II after Pearl Harbor. She was defeated. 1916, Woodrow Wilson facing two opponents. William Howard Taft was Republican, and Teddy Roosevelt. Wilson won that election. In 1917, and this is Lawrence of Arabia again, the British captured Gaza from the Turks. 1917 again, Lenin seized power in Russia, and that was the overthrew the Romanov dynasty, after which lasted for 900 years. And, of course, part of the Russian communist leadership was Leon Trotsky, Joseph Stalin, and others. And then Stalin, after Lenin's death, and Lenin, before he died, warned people about Stalin not to trust him. But he came out on top for many years and abused the Russians and starved to death about 30 million Ukrainians and others because they wouldn't go into kulaks, those farms. And instead of the Germans inventing this myth about the Germans invented the rocket. It was an American, Dr. Robert Goddard, demonstrated that two launched solid propellant rockets could fly. And Wernher von Braun learned from Robert Goddard. In 1934, Illinois elected the first black congressman, a guy named Arthur L. Mitchell. And then they had a guy named William Dawson, who lasted a long time and was a big ally of Richard Daley the First. 1940, you see this famous picture of the Galloping Gertie Bridge. It was called the Tacoma Narrow Bridge, which was poorly designed, and the wind made it whip and collapse. I don't know how many people were killed. In 1944, FDR won his fourth term, and after that, we got a constitutional amendment limiting presidents to two terms. We need two terms for senators, representatives, and we need to start instituting term limits for judges. We'll get into that another day. In 1962, Nixon quit politics, but he was back in 1968 and won that election. He also won re-election in 1972, and NPR this morning mentioned that Richard Nixon defeated George McGovern in 1972, and 2 years later, Nixon was forced to resign because he was facing impeachment for the cover-ups in Watergate. We had several blacks elected in 1967, Carl Stokes, first black mayor of Cleveland, Ohio, Richard Hatcher, first black mayor of Gary, Indiana. LBJ in that year signed a bill for PBS, and also out of that came National Public Radio. 1972, Nixon was reelected, defeating George McGovern in one of the biggest Republican landslides in U.S. history. But 2 years later, Nixon was forced to resign, as well as his vice president, Agnew, from Baltimore. In 1989, another black was elected. The first black was elected to governorship in Virginia, Douglas Wilder. And the interesting thing today, last night, was a lot of people, Karl Rove, Morris on Fox, and several others. In fact, Bill O'Reilly asked Morris, are you sure that's going to be this big of a landslide? Do you want to go out on a limb? Well, apparently Morris did, and we saw what happened last night. And also back in 1948, which is significant for two reasons. Number one, Obama's party last night was held at Chicago's McCormick Center. McCormick Center was named after the late publisher of the Chicago Tribune, a Rib Rock Republican named Colonel Robert McCormick. And the reason it was named McCormick Place, when Richard Daley was mayor of Chicago, they needed a big exhibition hall, and he decided on the lakefront. But everything that the Daley machine, and because Daley controlled the Democratic Party in Cook County, everything they did, the Chicago Tribune, and it owned the American at that time, Hearst paper, opposed the Daley machine because of all the graft and corruption associated with it. So Daley decided, well, we'll name this after Robert McCormick. So interestingly, the Chicago Tribune dropped their opposition. So it's interesting. Let's play. What happened in 1948, which is very similar to today, Colonel Robert McCormick was the publisher of the Chicago Tribune, and they predicted in a headline, they published this, that Dewey, who was the Republican nominee, and Earl Warren, the governor of California, predicted in their headline, or not predicted, stated that Dewey defeated Truman. And Truman got a big laugh out of this, and this is Truman's, there was a commentator named Kaltenbrunner, who was talking about how the election returns, and Harry Truman imitated him. Here's that imitation.
Night of America's most surprising election.
I had on the National Broadcasting Company, and Miss Kelton Barn was saying, while the president is a million votes ahead in the popular vote, we have yet to hear from the we are very sure that when the country vote comes in, Mr. Truman will be defeated by an overwhelming majority. And I went back to bed and went to sleep.
That's not the first time in American elections that the media has gotten it wrong. In Woodrow Wilson's election, when he ran for re-election, his opponent was Charles Evan Hughes, who was the Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court. California's votes had not come in at that time, they had the reporters going to Wilson saying that would he concede defeat to Charles Evan Hughes. And what they didn't realize that it was California that which put Woodrow Wilson over the top, and Woodrow Wilson was reelected to the presidency. So that was another time when the media got it wrong. This is significant because several so-called political pundits had this landslide for the Romney-Ryan ticket. Ryan must have knew something was wrong because he also filed for re-election in his district to the U.S. House of Representatives. So he didn't throw a total throw of the dice to win this election. Here is Robert McCormick. I think this is significant. Colonel McCormick had a radio program, and he died. If you ever go to Chicago, try to take a trip out to his estate in DuPage County. It's called Cottingy, and it's filled with World War I military memorabilia. Colonel McCormick got his name because he was colonel of a division in World War I. He served in France, and that was his estate out there named Cottingy. But here he is talking about one of his radio programs, the late Robert McCormick, who also his name is on the McCormick Center if you ever go to Chicago for an exhibition. It's a huge exhibition hall on the shore of Lake Michigan.
Ladies and gentlemen, from WGN's auditorium studio, we switch you to the scene of our new building ceremony. Go ahead, Lee Bennett at Illinois and St. Clair Street.
Thank you very much, John Mello, and good afternoon from a scene of great activity. Right before us here at Illinois and St. Clair Streets, preparations are being made for the digging of the huge pit for the first caissons upon which will rest a block-long addition to WGN and Tribune Tower. Here to take part in this significant ceremony is the man who has made this great undertaking possible, a man whose first thought has always been toward progress and ever-increasing service to the people of America and the Midwest. It is our proud privilege to introduce Colonel Robert R. McCormick, editor and publisher of the Chicago Tribune and president of WGN Chicago, serving the Middle West. Ladies and gentlemen, Colonel Robert R. McCormick.
As excavation preparations are just about complete for the first caisson for this new building, our thoughts naturally look ahead toward tomorrow's world of radio, facsimile, FM, television, and newspaper service, which this undertaking portends. But quite understandably, our thoughts also travel backward, delving into that hectic past out of which had risen Tribune Tower and the WGN building as we know them today, and out of which will rise this new addition, which we will know tomorrow. That eventful past starts nearly 100 years ago, on June 10, 1847. It was on that day that the Chicago Tribune was founded. The year 1847 marked more than the beginning of the Chicago Tribune. It was a year of numerous historical beginnings. Chicago was at the dawn of a new commercial and political era. The great new region west of the Alleghenies, something different from that part of the nation formed by the 13 colonies, was on the march. And Chicago was becoming its dynamic expression. This expression took the form of the creative mind. A free people set to work to make the dream of the human race come true. The first railroad was at hand. The telegraph outposts were near. The Illinois-Michigan Canal was about ready. Gas lights were around the corner. Plank roads were bringing the city out of the mud. The first stockyards had come, and the manufactured reaper. Into this stage of creation, the first issue of the Chicago Tribune was launched. 400 copies printed in small frame buildings at the corner of Lake and LaSalle Street. And as Chicago grew, the Tribune grew. Larger quarters were found over Gary's grocery store at the corner of Lake and Randolph Street. Then, one spring morning in 1855, a young editor with reddish hair and a spare figure walked into the Tribune office. And thereafter, the paper's history was largely of his making. This man was Jonas Medill, and for his entire lifetime, he became the dominant figure of the Tribune in the Midwest. Through the Tribune, it was Medill who supported Abraham Lincoln and the sound American politics for which he stood. It was Medill whose fine character and outspoken American principles were reflected in every column of the paper's makeup. It was Medill who brought the paper through trying days of the Civil War and established the Tribune as the true voice of the Middle West. Sparing no effort or expense to serve the dynamic community with which it had grown. As Chicago and the Tribune grew, more and more space was needed in order to provide this ever-increasing service. And after moving from building to building, one of the world's finest newspaper plants was erected on Michigan Avenue in 1924. The building we know today is Tribune Tower. In the meantime, the Tribune Company had acquired station WGN, which was operated from leased studios at the Drake Hotel. As radio grew, it was apparent that this means of communication was to become an equally important service to the community as newspaper communication. The Tribune and station WGN have worked hand in hand in serving this community with radio, became such an important factor that additional quarters were soon needed for the Tribune's new child. So it was that one of the nation's finest broadcasting plants was erected next to the Tribune Tower in 1935. This building is familiar to all Chicagoans today as the home of WGN. This afternoon, WGN and the Tribune, carrying on the tireless service of Jonas Medill, again work hand in hand to provide even greater service to the community with which these organizations have grown. As we are about to begin work on the first caisson, which will rest on bedrock, we are reminded that Chicago and the Midwest are still expanding, and WGN and the Tribune will always expand too. Expand with the city and community with which we have grown by serving for more than 98 eventful years. The spirit of Joseph Medill is still with us, and our eyes are turned, as his were always turned, toward the future and the welfare of our beloved city and community, Chicago and the Midwest.
Thank you very much, Colonel McCormick.
Well, that was from our historical audio archives. Another publisher, the last president to be elected from the state of Ohio, Warren Gamaniel Harding. You don't talk too much about Harding's accomplishments. He was a newspaper publisher. He played several musical instruments, primarily, I think, the tuba, which is also my instrument. He became a U.S. senator, of course. Alice Longworth, Roosevelt Longworth, called him a slob, who was believed to be, had some bad manners. He became a U.S. senator from the state of Ohio, and he was elected in 1920 to head the Republican presidential ticket with Calvin Coolidge, who was governor of Massachusetts and who had put down the Boston police strike. Anyway, Harding, among his accomplishments as president, he started the Bureau of the Budget, which is so important even today. His wife, was the first presidential candidate's wife to cultivate media relations between the presidential candidate and the media. Harding also was accused of having Negro blood. I don't know if this was his motivation. And tell the whites that you've got to give the Negro his civil rights. No other president had done that. No other Republican, no Democrat. Harding's administration also began international disarmament. They started under his Secretary of State, Frank Kellogg. I don't know if he was related to Kellogg's cornflakes. started the Washington Naval Disarmament Conference, where all the nations, the big military powers of the world, Britain, France, Italy, Japan, United States, convened in Washington to reduce the number of ships in the navies, the 5-5-3 ratio. He did other things in trying to streamline government. He also abused the English language with this horrible word normalcy, which should be normality. On November Veterans Day, we will have another audio extract from Harding. He was also, that was the first election to which had the three candidates, none of them were lawyers. Even Romney in this last election of 2012 studied law at Harvard. I think he got a law degree. And, of course, Mr. Roe got a law degree from Harvard Law School. And we'll get into that another day. Anyway, in that election, all three people, three candidates, Harding and Cox, were both Ohio newspaper publishers as well. And then they had a guy from Philadelphia, the Philadelphia Inquirer, were all journalists. It's one of the most remarkable non-lawyer elections in U.S. history. And it was the first election, the results were reported by radio. But they didn't make the mistake that was made by Kaltenbrenner in the 1948 election. We'll be back Friday, and hopefully we'll have the Dean of Illinois Political Reporters, Patrick Butler. We hope to have him back, and we'll get his take. And also, we're working on George did it, the great mayor of San Francisco, George Christopher, who's also a friend of Richard Daley. He was responsible for bringing the New York Giants to San Francisco. This is an unpublicized historical fact after the World Series. It's surprising how ignorant some of these sports writers are. They didn't do their research or they just ignored that fact. So we'll end with our usual politics and poker.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Hey, Tony, what are you going to do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too. Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year. Big ace.
Ace bets.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where's the cash?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush. Nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one. I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jack, bet out.
Politics and poker, shuffle up the cards and find the joker. Need a game for children, need a game is rough. Decisions like
who to pick,
how to play, not to bet,
where's the call of
duck. All right now, fellas, politics or poker, which is more important?
Parrot race.